Do classrooms need great pets? Are good signs bad? Trending news, my rant, and you know Matt Damon's mom will turn up. It's pit bulls, ponies, and faster pussycats on this episode. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From Pet Product News, a study finds classroom pets have a positive impact on students. Classroom pets have long been seen as a way to support teaching efforts and help students learn, and recently released research shows the true impact that animals can have on children in a classroom setting. Conducted by the Waltham Center for Pet Nutrition and National Institutes of Health, Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, the research was published in the American Education Research Association Open Journal, and the findings include details about how animals can reduce stress and anxiety, improve social interaction, and increase motivation and learning. I didn't need all those bigly worded names of institutions to tell me pets are awesome.
Is that, so that's what it is pets
are
awesome.
Okay, but they calm people down.
But here's this is one of those things that though we're talking about saying, does an animal's presence, you know, and as a past elementary school teacher, mm-hmm. I will say that I had my guinea pigs, I had turtles in the room, and because it's fun and it's cool and it creates a nice environment. But somebody said, you know what, let's actually study this.
Make sure it's right.
Well, it's, you know, because we like to study everything.
But, exactly.
But what's really awesome about this is that, hey, guess what? Animals in the classroom have some
awesome.
Wonderful they are. It's not just the fuzzy bunnies, as we were saying.
Fuzzy bunnies.
You know, how many times can you say fuzzy bunny? But fuzzy bunnies are not just awesome, but they actually have measurable positive benefits, particularly with children. Mm-hmm. And then when we start looking at students with anxiety disorders, for example, animals really can help right there. Looking at social interaction, and so we've seen the use of some pets, you know, service animals that help us, you know, with the social interaction. And then this other one, to increase motivation and learning. I'd want to learn a little bit more on that one, because if I find out that what they're actually saying is that fuzzy bunnies increase test scores,
a fuzzy bunny.
What? Say, out with the fuzzy bunnies. Okay?
I'd give everyone a fuzzy bunny.
Well, I mean, we've just found our way into the millionaire club.
There we go.
Because right now, if fuzzy bunnies raise test scores, we get
them.
And we, right now, though, we need to go buy all those fuzzy bunnies.
We do.
So that we can have, you know. No, I think it's a wonderful thing to imagine that animals, not imagine, but to actually verify that animals in classrooms make sense. Mm-hmm. And as we move more and more in this digital age towards a real sterile type of classroom, you mm-hmm. know, where everything's electronic and stuff like that, the idea of bringing some life truly back into the classroom and being able to validate that this life, you know, these animals are beneficial. They're not just cute in the back of the room. They don't just bite your finger.
Right.
But they actually provide an awesome experience, and they can help kids learn, and they can help that teaching situation be better. Mm-hmm. Then let's bring in the animals.
Well, and I thought it was funny, too, because they said the presence of a dog in the classroom can improve children's attitude towards school.
Yeah.
Because they're looking forward to it. And imagine there's a dog standing up by the teacher, and the kids are wondering what's happening. She's doing something on the key, you know. I can see it.
It creates an environment that's more real, right?
Yes.
And so the more we can make a classroom feel like a welcoming place, and so a really cute dog that's part of the classroom, some turtles in the back, some fish.
Fish aren't pets. Come on, you can't take them home.
I guess you're right. You can't pet them. But, you know, a kitty cat, a little mm-hmm. kitten, and stuff like that. It creates an atmosphere of a tone of relaxation instead of stress. And that, I think, is what we're really looking at here, the relationship between animals and stress. And guess what? Stress reduces with animals present.
This one from the Inquisitor. Yes, the Baltimore School Board approved miniature horses in class as service animals. The Baltimore City Public Schools Board of Commissioners has approved an expanded permission for the use of service animals in Baltimore schools to include miniature horses, a rule stating that all people with these service animals must be permitted access to the school district property. While most people have seen dogs as service animals, the Baltimore School Board will now approve miniature horses as another option. Baltimore City Public School students can still use dogs as service animals, but now they can use miniature horses too. It would have been funny if they said, no more dogs.
No more dogs.
Only horses.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute, you've now... I want a horse.
I know.
I want a miniature horse.
What, 24
inches? 24 to 34
inches. They're tiny.
I'm like, these are horse. Okay, so the big issue, right? We think of service animals and we imagine dogs, no problem,
of course, right?
You know, seeing eye dogs for the blind,
mm-hmm. Seizure dogs,
yep. And things like that. Okay, and here. Miniature horses, and I'll have to admit, as you know, as an educated educator, as we say here on Busted Pencils, I had no idea that miniature horses served as quote service animals.
I don't imagine how they do that.
Well, according to this, they do, and in fact, one of the reasons why Baltimore City had to approve this is specifically dealing with the Americans with Disabilities Act that requires and allows service dogs, service animals.
Right.
Well, if you have a service miniature horse,
you need to approve it.
And that miniature horse is allowed then to come into the Baltimore City schools. Now what do you do that day? You're the third grade teacher, and in comes the student walking a miniature horse.
Okay, let's picture this for a second. Little kids coming in. What do the rest of the kids do? Oh,
a pony!
A pony! Mom, I want a pony!
It's just, wait, you know, Bonnie brought in her pony,
I
want one.
Yes.
I know. Well, now it does say they have to be house trained, and they have to be approved service animals. So I guess you and I both need to get over the fact that there are miniature horses trained specifically.
Now,
potty trained. But, you know, one of the other interesting things to note is why a horse over a dog? Well, they live longer.
Yes.
And so trauma of the death of a service animal, for kids particularly, can be avoided. So maybe there's a little bit here that's not as funny as we want it to be.
But go I'm ahead. Picturing a kid, you know, a kid with a miniature donkey or miniature pony. Sorry, donkey too.
Right.
You can bring that'll be next.
That's next.
So then, as they grow up, though, it's the pony's not going to change.
Well,
you see what I mean? I'm talking about the size.
Okay, but maybe it's a seizure pony.
It could be a seizure pony.
And so size.
It could be.
Size doesn't matter.
And horses live for 25, 35 years.
Hey.
I mean, that's awesome. If it's a useful service animal, that's great.
Yeah, but you know, here, this is one of those Busted Pencils news segments. Who knew? Well, only if you listen to Busted Pencils would you know that service miniature horses are allowed in a classroom coming to you or near you sometime, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or here, put it this way. Teachers, when that horse walks in, welcome it.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio. Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
A letter from a teacher. Sorry in advance for the length, but I need to get this out. After 22 years, I don't know if I have it in me anymore. I'm a teacher. I will always be a teacher. I love teaching, but this isn't teaching. Everything I'm required to do is about preparing my students for the damn test. I spend all day, every day, ramming test prep down my students' throats. Then I do what seems like 8,000 reams of paperwork each week to prove that I am ramming test prep down my students' throats. There's no joy in this for them. I see their blank faces with eyes glazed over. There's no fun or excitement in learning, for they are not really learning. This past weekend, I spent literally every waking hour working, taking breaks only to do laundry, prepare food for my son. Then I wrote my lesson plans, all of which required, quote, non-negotiables, end quote, included and explained. I examine my data to make decisions about what skills might need some reteaching and what skills could be practiced and reinforced in centers. I dutifully created my differentiated centers, and I made them rigorous, a term that has no business in education. I printed off copies of things on my own printer using my own ink and paper because, hey, you know, we only get 1,000 copies a month. I laminated, cut, put things in folders to make sure I was ready. Then, in the middle of my English language arts block today, my principal showed up to do a walkthrough. Apparently, this go-round was focused on centers because she asked to see mine, and she did for all of my teammates, I later learned. Well, I figured this one would be easy after everything I did over the weekend. She looked at them, asked me a couple questions, and then left. My observation notification came through after school, and I looked. Imagine my surprise when I received a basic for the Danielson Domain 1E, Designing Coherent Instruction. My principal's only comment, quote, "While it's good to see differentiated centers, there needs to be paired text and writing in your centers," end quote. Make no mistake, I am open to criticism, especially when criticism is constructive and valid. This, however, is neither constructive nor valid. This is about playing a game. This is about making up a fault that isn't included in the rubric when you can't find one that is. This is about making sure that teachers don't get too many points so we can keep those merit raises based to a minimum. This is what education has become. It's a game. It's inauthentic. It's draining. They're putting out the fire that has blazed inside of me. They're destroying my soul and my passion. I don't know what to do now. I am a teacher. I will always be a teacher. I love teaching, but this isn't teaching. And we wonder why we have a teaching shortage. He's the guitarist for the notorious rock band Faster Pussycat and an animal rights activist working with pit bulls, here to talk on the positive of pets in the classroom and special qualities of pit bulls, Ace Von Johnson.
How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. Give us a quick snapshot of your music career.
You know, within 2 years of being in a band, I was still in high school. I was already playing with, you know, my favorite punk bands, you know, the UK Subs and the Misfits. And my band became like the local hero band in San Diego. And I networked and learned a lot and cut my teeth with that whole scene. And but by the time I was in my, you know, like 22, 23, I stopped kind of listening to so much of that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm in my 30s and I still listen to the UK Subs and the Misfits, but, and the Damned and all that stuff, Stiffle Fingers, Rancid, all that. But as I started getting, I guess, better on guitar, I wanted something that sort of fit with that. And I kind of went back to my roots where I was like, well, I want to, nobody's telling me I can't listen to the Eagles and Pantera, so I'm going to listen to both. So I started trying to integrate all that into my playing. And I was playing in these punk bands and doing all right. You know, I was playing professionally and, you know, jumping from band to band. And I wanted to play Alice Cooper. I didn't want to play Murphy's Law, you know, Quest for Herb or something like that. You know, I'd kind of run that. It'd run its course. So
sure.
I started networking further. And by that point, you know, I lived in L.A. I'm from here, but I did San Diego. It was my home for high school around that, like 14 to like 19.
Sure.
So by 19, I joined a band and blah, blah, blah. I lived up here. So in my early to mid-20s, started networking with a bunch of different people and worked with guys from Jerry Montano from Hell Yeah, and Todd Youth from Danzig, and just all these other guys, and eventually led me to a project that had the rhythm section for Faster Pussycat, and I'm sure you can figure out how that went. So
take a little bit of Eagles, take a little Pantera, mix that up, and then Ace Von Johnson, lead guitarist of Faster Pussycat. I'm not sure mathematically the equation. some people would actually see the connection, but I get it and I love it. Great music, and I'd love to spend a whole lot of time, but we are Busted Pencils and we are talking about education, and I'm sure the listener right now is sitting there going, okay, so what in the world are you guys doing with Ace Von Johnson, Faster Pussycat guitarist? But you know, I want to bring in, there's a side of you that I found extremely interesting, and you know, coming through and how we made this connection through, you know, like any social network that's out there, through the Twitter. But you have a soft spot in your heart for a certain animal.
I do, yeah. I'm a big pit bull advocate and dog rescue in general, but specifically pit bulls is what I champion, yeah.
Check out this segment.
Get ready for a pit bull who goes to school. It might seem like an unlikely pairing, but for Lulu, it is a perfect fit. NBC 10's Dawn Timoney has the story from Lawrence Intermediate School in Mercer County.
What does it mean to have a stereotype? What does that mean?
This is a lesson we can all learn.
People judge by looks or rumors.
You should never judge a book by its cover.
And today, there's a very special teacher.
You can help me, should I?
Meet Lulu.
I don't know about you, but she doesn't look all that vicious to me, especially not with the pink tutu, right?
Lulu is a pit bull whose life wasn't always filled with tutus and children. This fifth grade teacher discovered her at a shelter in South Jersey.
When I first found Lulu, she was sitting there not looking so good.
Lulu had very little fur, looked malnourished and dejected. Hard to believe that's the same dog visiting Lawrence Intermediate School.
Can you see the face?
After living with Tammy DiRico just 6 months, Lulu passed the test to be a therapy dog. And now, like her owner, she's a teacher too.
Lulu is ready to begin her lesson.
This pit bull's lesson is a simple one. She may look big and scary.
People have a lot of stereotypes about pit bulls.
But she's a sweetheart on the inside.
He loves Gladstone.
Kids say they're learning they shouldn't be quick to judge Lulu or anyone else either.
I didn't really like pit bulls, but then I met Lulu.
To be honest, I was kind of nervous because I've heard some not so good things about them, but now I like them a lot.
Tammy has seen an about face every time Lulu has visited the school over the past 4 years.
She is able to teach lessons in a way that another breed could not, because she is a victim of stereotypes and prejudices.
So when it's story time,
Mr. Rico gets a little choked up when I read this book. Before you were mine, was someone mean to you?
Hopefully it's Lulu's story they'll remember.
Because now you are home. If I had said, oh my goodness, a pit bull, I would not have gotten to know this wonderful dog who wears tutus, who comes in to fifth grade classrooms, who makes everybody smile. You know, it would have been my loss and her loss.
Dawn Timoney, NBC 10 News.
All right, Ace, Lulu in a fifth grade classroom.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great because I think stereotypes are a huge issue that people, I mean, from being fifth grade, you know, younger to adulthood are going to be dealing with. I think it's a good stepping stone for children to see something like that, or to learn to not judge a book by its cover.
Right.
You know, I mean, when I was in kindergarten, my best friend was black and everyone thought that was weird. You know, I have a niece now who her father, my sister, and whatever, she's mixed or black. I don't know what the right terminology is.
Sure.
I'm sorry. But you know, she deals with that stuff too. And the best part is that I got them to, rescue a pit bull as well. So she kind of was able to relate to that as well. I think more programs like that, although I don't know if program's the right term, but more stuff like that at a young age is really helpful, not only for the dogs, but just for children to see, whether it's anything like that, that's got a negative connotation or stereotype, to kind of break that mold.
Yeah, I have to admit, I mean, that was the part, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm a dog lover and stuff, and obviously an educator, but the part in there, and I've seen pit bulls in service roles and things like that, and so that was but this idea of pit bulls in schools, but okay, that's great too, and you know, and I've seen rescue dogs in schools my time as an educator, as a teacher, and as a dean, I've seen that. But this, I loved what I liked about this Lulu segment was the idea of taking this pit bull, which quote has a stereotype, and her main function by going into schools though was to do that, the combating of stereotypes, not just like, hey, check out the cool service dog, but let's talk about this issue of stereotypes and what we think judging a book by its cover, however you want to say it. And you know, I gotta say, I mean, you know, lately it seems more important than ever that we try to get that message out for in schools. And I, you know, I do you have thoughts about that? Or
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure how deep down the rabbit hole I should or would go. But, you know, I think today's in the current climate with everything that's going on. I mean, I think it's imperative for children to learn that, you know, it's, you know, the someone's religious background or the color of the skin or, you know, how many fingers they have or whatever doesn't necessarily make the person that they are. You know, it's everybody's an individual and you should judge them as such. But, you know, I think it's great that they're able to use, I mean, obviously not only that she's a rescue and also a service animal, but sure. that she's a pit bull, I think is a great, you're kind of getting, you know, a couple birds with one stone here. And I wish there were more people in roles like this teacher, I hope his name escapes me, but that were able to do stuff like that. And that's kind of what I try to even do with my dog, Mila. Just, you know, I mean, I live in Hollywood and I can't tell you how often we walk around and people, most people are very curious. Oh, is she friendly? Can I pet your dog? But sometimes people are, they see her and they like, I've seen people like cross the street.
Right. I was going to say, it's like they cross the street. And no, I mean, this is, you know, this is a horrible comparison, but you think about that. And I, you know, from a race and ethnicity standpoint, that stereotype of saying, I see somebody who looks different than me coming down the road and they've crossed the street, you know, and boy, so you just put that out there. And I thought about that. And I've had friends tell me about that, what it feels like to be, you know, and they know that somebody's walking the other way. And so that was a really cool connection. But so you're walking around with in Hollywood with a pit bull. And yeah, people were saying, wow, I'm going to get on the other side and or, but here's the difference, you know, it's like, wait, it's a great dog. It's a great, yeah. And the same thing is, it's like this person walking towards you or this person in your classroom or this person on your sports team or this person in your rock and roll band. It's like, wait yeah. a minute, man, let's judge people on the merits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wish more people processed things like that, you know, rather than, you know, I don't even really want to touch too much, John.
No, bring it back to Lulu, the pit bull, right? I mean, I love that idea.
I think it's great. And I wish, like I said, you know, I wish there were more people doing stuff like that, especially when it comes to, pit bulls and, or rescue dogs in general. So I think it's cool. I think it's great for the kids. I think from a classroom perspective, it's just a great learning project experience. You know, I'm not really sure what else to say. I think it's wonderful. I'm glad that Lulu's safe. You know.
Yeah. So, well, for me, it was the connection, the interest. You know, seeing the work that you were doing on Twitter, seeing the work, then following it up online, and seeing the work you're doing with Rescue, and then knowing the work I'm doing with education in schools, and then the Busted Pencils identity is to try to be a little bit more on the edge, a little bit more punk rock. I was like, this makes for a really good show if we can bring this together, and to say, you know, look, this is a learning experience. These dogs are amazing. So my question, you know, looking at some of the rescue work and stuff, you know, is there a future Ace Von Johnson's, you know, pushing and or getting behind some school related activities? Does this make you think about some new possibilities of rescuing pit bulls? You know, I'm putting you on the spot, but you know,
in a school scenario, for me personally, not necessarily. I mean, of course I'd like to endorse anything that comes along like that, you know, any sort of program. I mean, even the program where they're getting these, you know, pulling dogs and putting them in prisons and having mm-hmm. prisoners train them and stuff like that. I think it's sort of like a work release pre thing. I think anything like that, anything that's mutually beneficial to society, i.e. the, you know, children in schools and, you know, these animals that we've, you know, basically done this to ourselves, I think is a great opportunity. You know, with what I do professionally, it's hard for me to do much else, you know what I mean, as far as like
well, you mean you don't have time, you know, between concerts?
No, I don't. I wish I barely have time to talk on the phone.
Right.
You know, it's like gotten to that point. But, you know, I am trying to set myself up to a point where I can foster when I'm home. Mm-hmm. So that's a step in the right direction. I will be volunteering with a friend here soon, trying to help teach dogs, preferably to get them to be service animals. So just stuff like that. And I encourage people to do the same. You know, even if you can't have a pet, a cat, a dog, a squirrel, whatever your interest is, you can always advocate. I mean, it's a gift with social media nowadays. And the funny thing is, I'm sure that half those kids in fifth grade have Instagram or, you mm-hmm. know, Snapchat or whatever the kids are using, you know, is that you can make these things work in your favor. I mean, like I mentioned, my niece is 10 or 11 years old, and she's got her own Instagram solely to promote rescue pit bulls. I thought that was ingenious.
Awesome.
So, I mean, and she's a child. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people can do, you know, just teaching people to, you know, not judge. I hate to be so obvious here, but not judge a book by its cover, you know what I mean? And so I think if more kids, younger children, whatever people, young adults, you know, adults, old adults, you know, whatever, were proactive with stuff like this, I think the world would be a better place.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know if we can say it any better than that. So Ace Von Johnson, Faster Pussycat, Pit Bulls, Pit Bull Rescue. Man, dude, thanks for busting pencils with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I wonder what Matt Damon's mom thinks about animals in the classroom.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
What do you think about this idea, or is this something that actually doesn't need to be thought about? You just need to tell us more about it.
Actually, I hadn't ever heard of therapy dogs in the classroom, but, you know, when you were a little tyke, okay, there were more animals in the classroom than there are today because for a variety of reasons, one of which is I think people have gotten more concerned about having animals in cages. So if you've got a little bunny rabbit in your classroom, you know, and you're giving it a carrot every day, wait a minute, is this what we want
right.
to be telling kids? And people are more aware these days just about caging animals and animal rights, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that we see fewer caged animals in classroom is a good thing. And those animals were in the classrooms with little kids and probably even elementary school kids in some cases, because they were beneficial for lots of kids, especially. I taught kindergarten for a couple of years before I went into higher ed. And there was a little girl the first year I taught who was so sad when her mother would drop her off. And she held that guinea pig and pet that guinea pig for the first large chunk of her morning. And it really was comforting for Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And there are kids who have anxiety, who have learning issues, sensory issues, autism, who really do benefit from having an animal in the class. So the thing, I hadn't thought about it before I saw the article, but the thing, positive thing about a therapy dog, first of all, it's been trained to be a therapy dog.
Right.
But secondly, it's not in a cage.
Okay.
So it's in the class, given the one article did put the pit bull in the tutu, and that seems humiliating, but but at least the dog is relatively free, the way domestic dogs are anyway in our country, and that seems acceptable to a lot of people. And it's offering the same benefits to kids, I think, of really being a source of comfort and, you know, ameliorating fear and bringing some kids out, helping them be able to talk where they weren't before. You know, I can see a lot of positive things about it.
Well, I mean, so you've got two different issues that I gave to look at. Was this early childhood and the therapy dog? And there seems to be a lot of indications that, particularly as you said, whether it's anxiety, fears, and things like that, how the trained therapy dog seems to really particularly, and you even said, you know, as a kindergarten teacher, that guinea pig probably was serving as some type of therapy animal for that child. But here we're purposely taking in trained mm-hmm. animals and smaller children, and it's helping with the anxiety. Mm-hmm. So there's that side. And then I know the poor dog in the tutu, but I just thought it was an interesting take to throw to to Nancy Carlson Page.
Especially interesting because people have assumptions and stereotypes about poor pit bulls.
Right. So that was why I thought that one was interesting about, yeah, because I'd never thought about, okay, you know what, here the intention. Now, again, the dog here, I think it's Lulu, is trained and is a therapy pit bull, but the purpose comes from a totally different angle, and that's what I thought was unique about it.
Yeah, that was a fifth grade, and the kids are very ready at that age to talk about stereotyping. They have really interesting ideas about stereotyping. They say things like, don't judge a book by its cover, because they can think about what that is, whereas a kindergartner really can't. So it's serving a different educational purpose, but I think it's really a valid one as well. That teacher got kids to think a lot about how we view each other, who we really are, how we know who we really are, through the pit bull.
Mm-hmm. I wondered about this one, though, as a parent, and my kids are now in school, and I think about this, and I wonder about the stereotype myself of the dog, and this made me think about this, how I would feel about a letter coming home saying, there's a pit bull coming into class tomorrow, and we're going to have a lesson on stereotypes. I wonder how many parents would be concerned.
What do you think would concern them?
I wonder if the actual, what we're talking about here, if people don't have some proclivity already at saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, bring in a labradoodle, that's great. Bring in a pit bull, I know those things have eaten 13 children across 50 states. We know for sure they're absolutely the most horrible dogs ever. Now, without any real evidence necessarily to make that statement, but the portrayal of pit bulls, typically if we watch the evening news, is, and sadly that does happen, but it will be put forth as, small child attacked by pit bull. And
So the teacher would have to do a lot of explaining in the letter home that the dog, first of all, that the dog was trained as a therapy dog. Because the little video that you sent me, that dog looked really sweet and docile. But if the dog was abused, they didn't know what the dog's earlier life was like. And actually, my older son had a dog that had been abused, and you couldn't quite ever tell if it was going to have a reaction. Because it gets kind of programmed in there in the dog. But, I have to assume that they had done some really careful screening to make sure that this was appropriate for the kids, and probably some discussion with the parents. And I suppose parents could have opted out. In this case, it looked like it was very successful.
Right. I just found the idea. I think we've come a nice long way in fact recognizing the caging of animals and talking about that, and so thereby having animals free in the room and allowing students, when now whether we're talking early childhood and the possibility that there's a calming effect that the dog can have, and then though this other side of talking about stereotypes and getting into now, does that really help us lead into possibly a deeper, richer discussion than about stereotypes we might apply to our friends or to our neighbors or to, and that's why I was thinking, boy, what a unique idea.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way for a thoughtful teacher to enter into a really complicated topic. And with kids in fifth grade or fourth grade or sixth grade, they can have a richer discussion and make more sense out of it if it's some concrete experience they're having in the classroom rather than just an abstract discussion about stereotyping. So the fact that the dog is there and they can look at the dog and they can talk about what they see, that's going to help them have the conversation.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Tracy Douglas, a teacher from California, takes on the famous Alfie Cohn question. What are the schools our children deserve?
Schools that are engaging, that have a full, well-rounded curriculum, that have small class sizes, that have services for kids, good libraries, and that are teacher-driven.
He's a regular guest of the program and has literally written the book on nearly every pressing topic in education. Alfie Cohn and Cohn's Zone. Signs, signs, every classroom is full of signs. Alfie, Can a sign actually stop a student from whining?
Well, when I see that sign that says no whining or the slash through the word whining, the message seems to be, you know, I don't want to hear your complaints. Anything you've been told to do, you better do it without fussing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, I mean, maybe the principal feels that way about a teacher, you know, but this is really a message about people with more power telling people with less power to shut up and capitulate. And I am always wondering about where that comes from and whether it's a sentiment worth endorsing.
Okay.
You know, if I'm going to put a sign up that says no whining, it says my convenience matters more to me than your satisfaction, your happiness, or even your learning. Whereas the best educators have the exact opposite approach, which is if a lot of people are unhappy about what I've suggested they do, maybe I ought to rethink what I've asked them to do and how much say they have about the whole process.
So is it, I look at this one too and wonder about, you know, how much effect, and this is where the research part is does this move students away from, quote, you know, actively engaging in civic participation and teachers not realizing that while on one hand we're saying the job of school is to create active social citizens, but at the same time we're putting up signs that say you will listen and comply, you will not whine.
Yes, and a lot there turns on what you mean by active citizenry and citizenship.
Sure.
And so on. First of all, the very word citizen or good citizen is often used in school to mean mindlessly obedient.
Right.
A good citizen is one who doesn't make trouble, doesn't ask too many inconvenient questions, and so on. Secondly, on a larger curricular level, what is training or background in citizenship really mean? Joel Westheimer has done some excellent work here in his most recent book, for example, asking us to rethink how this is more than just learning a bunch of facts about history or politics. To help someone become a good citizen in the most meaningful sense of that term, to become someone who is part of a real democracy, is to raise people who ask challenging questions and sometimes refuse to go along when something outrageous happens. So the question then for us becomes, how do we not only permit but actively encourage kids? I wrote an article about this years ago called Challenging Students and How to Have More of Them. And in a way, all of those stupid inspirational posters and no whining, all the messages that say shut up and do what you're told, are the flip side of that. They're communicating to students, be the least ambitious kind of citizen. Be the kind who votes every 2 or 4 years and otherwise doesn't raise a peep about injustice.
Right. I've said that as my old career as a social studies teacher, the probably easiest and the least effective way of showing citizenship is voting.
The great social theorist Ben Barber, who just died recently, said voting is the least important act in a democracy.
Right. It's like clicking like on Facebook now. It's, you know, hey, I contributed, but I didn't do a darn thing.
And I don't have the answer for how you make a decision by consensus when there's 300 million people involved. But I have an answer about how you do that when there's 30 people involved in a classroom. You don't have them vote. Voting just has the people who have the numbers roll over those who have fewer. That's adversarial majoritarianism. Mm-hmm. Real democracy, where you try to come to a compromise, you hash out a consensus. This requires listening.
Mm-hmm.
This requires perspective taking, where you imagine and ask about what led those who disagree with you to have come to a different position. That's the guts of democracy. And it also involves that constant questioning frame of mind, not just critical thinking in terms of a series of logical skills that you possess, not critical thinking where you learn to recognize ad hominem arguments or something, but a disposition to be a critical thinker, to not let stuff go, to say, yeah, but why? Or who benefits from this arrangement? And what are we going to do about it if there's a problem? That's the opposite of stop whining and get to work. And it's also the opposite of those appalling inspirational posters, you know, with the faded sunsets that say, you can if you think you can,
right.
You know, which place all the burden on the individual and in effect blame the individual if she doesn't succeed, rather than focusing our attention on the structural barriers to success that are the real problems.
Yeah, my favorite but least favorite inspirational poster is, of course, the mountain climber hanging over an overhang, feet dangling with one hand, and the caption saying, you can do it. And it's like, well, but
you, if do it means plunge to your death, yeah.
Yeah, you know. What about this other thing, though, you talk about only positive attitudes beyond this point?
I've actually seen that in three classrooms. Only positive attitudes permitted past this point, where I look at this and I think what it's really saying is, and what it ought to have said is, my mental health is so precarious, you have to pretend that you're happy. I mean, obviously, kids are not happy and don't have positive attitudes all the time, partly because there's good reason not to be happy. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, kids, positive attitudes turns out to be yet another euphemism for compliance.
Sure.
Maybe the problem, the reason the kids don't have positive attitudes is I'm giving them worksheets to do instead of meaningful learning. Or I didn't let them have any say in about how the classroom is arranged or anything else. So their attitudes are understandably positive. But a poster like that says the problem is you for not going along and pretending you're okay with it and complying, so I, as the teacher, never have to step back and ask the tough questions about the structure I've created, the curriculum, the pedagogy, and so on.
So it's positivity. We can also then come back to the student and actually ask them and say, maybe ask them a question like, why are you so glum today? Or we don't do that, though, do we?
No, I think a lot of people, especially, I hope this isn't unfair, but I think especially elementary school teachers really don't want to hear a discouraging word. You know, they're looking for, and in many cases, many seem to need that expression that everything is good. But that doesn't mean that kids aren't angry or sad or hurt. It just means they get the message from the teacher they've got to pretend they're not and sweep the negative feelings under the rug. And when that happens, people just sort of trip over them, speaking metaphorically, of course. So, yeah, I love to have, at the first week of school, to have a class meeting where the whole point is to say, tell me why sometimes school sucks for you. Don't mention any names, but tell me about an experience you've had in school before this where you just wanted to get the hell out of there, where it made you feel terrible.
Right.
And pair up and have them exchange experiences and then come back. Let's make a list of them. And then that becomes the point of departure for asking, what can we do in this classroom this year so you almost never feel that way? And that becomes a kind of negative learning where you build, you acknowledge, and you're able to vocalize the bad experiences you've had. And we, not just you individually, but us as a classroom community, figure out how to construct a learning environment that's likely not to repeat those bad experiences you've had. But you can't do that kind of collaborative construction unless you begin by acknowledging that sometimes things don't go well.
Time now for our weekly tribute to historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
They have the guns. We have the poets. Therefore, we will win.
Be sure and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BustedPencils.com. Get our podcast in iTunes or Google Play and log on to our website, BustedPencils.com. My thanks to Ace Vaughn Johnson, Matt's mom, Tracy Douglas, Alfie Cohn, and you. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Keep busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.